I'm Christina Johnston. Can everybody hear me? Not very well. Okay, I'll try to speak up a little bit. My voice tends to soften. So I'm Christina Johnston. I'm a neurologist with Lakeshore Health Partners here in Holland. I'm a community neurologist, general neurology, so stroke is part of what I do. And I see patients in the hospital in the emergent and inpatient setting for stroke. So May is Stroke Awareness Month, National Stroke Awareness Month. So I was asked to give a talk to sort of educate the community about how to recognize stroke symptoms and what to do if you feel that that's something that you're experiencing, and sort of an introduction to the whole process of how we try to treat and manage stroke after it occurs. So start off with a few stroke myths. Stroke affects the heart. Stroke only happens in the elderly. Pain is the number one symptom. One should sleep it off. Emergent care isn't necessary, and strokes are not preventable. Stroke facts: stroke is actually a brain attack, not a heart attack. It's most common in the elderly. However, it can happen at any age, including children or infants. Stroke is almost never painful, except for in rare exceptions. Sleep is actually not recommended when a stroke is beginning, because it will affect the potential for treatment. Emergency medical treatment is what we recommend as soon as possible. And strokes are very preventable. Some statistics about stroke: about 800,000 new victims of stroke each year in the United States. A stroke occurs in an individual every 40 seconds. This is the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. It's the number one cause of disability in the United States. 87% of strokes are of the ischemic type, and 80% of strokes are preventable. Annually, about $34 billion is spent on taking care of individuals who suffer from stroke each year. So what is a stroke? Of course, it's a brain attack, as I've already said. What happens when a stroke occurs is that basically there's an interference of arterial blood flow to a region of the brain. An analogy is basically it's a clogging of the pipe, or something clogging the circulation to the brain. This disrupts the oxygen to the neurons, and by disrupting the cells of oxygen, this leads to neuronal damage, which leads to symptoms and potential long-term neurologic deficit. So depending on where the lack of blood circulating occurs, we'll depict what sort of symptoms occur. This is just a very simple picture. Essentially, this is the brain in a cross-section. This artery here is the internal carotid artery, and this splits and becomes the anterior cerebral artery and the middle cerebral artery. This artery here, if you look at the enlarged version, this has some plaque, some cholesterol plaque, that's narrowing the opening of this artery, and within that narrowing, there is a clot. So somewhere in the body, this clot migrated up to the brain, and now it got stuck. So now this part of the artery no longer has circulation. And so what's beyond there will have a problem. There are two different types of stroke: hemorrhagic stroke and ischemic stroke. Ischemic stroke is by far the more common type, and this is the result of lack of blood flow. As illustrated here, there's a blockage on this picture. And then this is the territory that is fed by that artery. And as you can see, it's darkened, illustrating that there's lack of circulation here, and this is at risk for cell death. This is an illustration of a hemorrhagic type stroke, where there's bleeding that occurs. And these are less common, but can actually be more devastating. Two types of ischemic stroke, just to comment, are embolic or thrombotic. This is a really simple video that I just wanted to show you. It's maybe a minute or two. So this probably illustrates it better than what I can describe.
A stroke may occur when there is an insufficient supply of blood to a brain region, or when damage to the vasculature in a specific brain region causes bleeding into the nervous tissue. In general, there are three types of strokes that occur. They are classified based on the type of vascular defect that causes them. Cerebral hemorrhaging occurs when a vessel bursts, causing bleeding in a region of the cerebral cortex. An embolic stroke occurs when small clots that formed on other parts of the circulatory system occlude cerebral arteries and cut off the blood supply to a part of the cerebral cortex. An ischemic stroke occurs when a narrowing or blockage of cerebral vasculature results in oxygen deprivation in a specific part of the cerebral cortex. The specific functional deficits observed in someone who has suffered a stroke can be correlated with the functions of the damaged cortical region. In a healthy brain, the nerve impulses from the cerebral cortex travel through the brain and cross over to the opposite contralateral side of the body. When a stroke occurs, damage to the cortex is usually unilateral, since information to and from the cortex crosses over the midline. The effects of a stroke on the left side of the brain occur on the right side of the body. A person who has suffered a stroke may experience paralysis that may involve the face, weakness or paralysis of limbs, often limited to one side of the body, loss of sensation that parallels paralysis, difficulty with speech, double vision, loss of vision, dizziness or vomiting, severe headache, loss of consciousness.
Recognizing the signs of a stroke is critical. Symptoms will be sudden in onset that basically evolve over the course of minutes. We're not talking hours. They typically occur rapidly because lack of blood flow will lead to very quick symptoms. Typically, people will have evolution of their symptoms over the course of 2 to 5 minutes, and potentially longer than that, but that is a pretty typical time frame. It rapidly will spread to additional parts of the body in adjacent areas of the brain that are involved. This is another simple illustration to basically illustrate how to quickly recognize a stroke. The mnemonic is be fast, representing balance and steadiness or dizziness that occurs suddenly. E for eyes, meaning loss of vision, double vision, blurring of the vision. F for face, drooping of one side of the face or an asymmetry of the face with the smile. Arm, representing a sudden weakness of the arm. Often we tell people to put their hands out in front, and if they can't raise their arm or if it drifts, that's a way to recognize that there's a problem. S is for speech. Slurring of the speech or inability to speak and form words can be a symptom of stroke. And T is for time, to call 911 as quickly as possible. So Mr. Stickman here, he's having a stroke on the left side of his brain, as illustrated by, I don't know what you would call this sort of thing here, but what you can see is it's occurring on the left side of his head, which is affecting the right side of his body. So he is not able to see properly, which is illustrated by these X's. His face is drooping on the right side. His arm is weak, noodly arm, noodly leg, difficulty controlling. Potentially, he's also having difficulty walking. He may be confused. He might have inability to communicate. Probably his speech is slurred or potentially unable to form words. So this man should get to the ER. So time is actually very important. Time is brain, is what we say routinely. If you see that you're having a stroke or your family member is having a stroke, getting to the emergency room within as quickly as you can be critical. We have about 3 to 4 hours to treat you, so from the time your symptoms begin. So don't ignore the symptoms. Don't sleep it off. Getting to the emergency room to be evaluated by a physician will improve your chances of recovery and potentially save your life. What is a TIA? This is commonly referred to as a mini stroke. Essentially, a TIA is a similar phenomenon where there is blockage of blood flow, again illustrated here by a blood clot, again affecting in this man the middle cerebral artery. But what happens here is that this blood clot eventually is dissolved. So for a brief period of time, the blood flow is restricted. And so this individual will have symptoms that last for a few minutes, potentially up to an hour, but then they'll start to improve and their symptoms will go away without leaving any permanent damage to the brain. Approximately 15% of individuals who do have a TIA will have a stroke within the next 6 months. 65% of those actually occur in the first 30 days after the TIA. So it's important to, if you have a TIA, also go to the emergency room for evaluation, because things need to be investigated as to why you're having these symptoms. There is potentially a reason. So what can be done? Our goals as physicians in the emergency room are to reestablish the circulation to that part of the brain as quickly as possible. We want to break up the clot or eliminate the clot or remove the clot so that that part of the brain can be restored. We want to limit permanent tissue damage to those neurons, preserve brain function, and ultimately we want to limit disability and save your life. So in the emergency room, a physician will see you quickly. You'll be expedited in as a priority. You'll be evaluated by a nurse, a physician. You'll have a scan of your brain to make sure that there's no hemorrhage or bleeding. We'll get labs. We will check for any other potential reasons that you might be having these type of symptoms other than a potential stroke. And really the question we want to know is, are you having a stroke and are you a candidate for an intervention called TPA? This is a CAT scan. This is just an illustration of what we see when we scan you. A CAT scan basically shows a very basic picture of the head. As you can see, the details are not greatly shown, but this is a man or a lady who's had a stroke, and it's already starting to show up on this left side of the brain. Again, a large territory. The reason we can tell is because there's some graying or darkening of this tissue of the brain, and you can see on this other side of the brain, you see the sulcal markings here that are nice and normal. On this side, we lose that because this side of the brain is swelling. This is an MRI. An MRI is sometimes more detailed representation of a stroke that we can't always see on a CAT scan right away. And this is a CTA. This is a picture or an illustration of the arteries. And here you can see that this is the artery that's blocked. On the opposite side, this artery is patent, meaning the blood is flowing nicely and you can see all the branches off into the nether regions of the brain. On this side, it stops right about here. These arteries are not getting the blood flow that they're supposed to be getting. So TPA is actually a medication. It's administered via a vein. It's commonly known as the clot buster medication. It's called tissue plasminogen activator. Basically, its purpose is to break up a clot, kind of like the Drano that you put down the drain to disintegrate the blockage in your pipes. This is the way that we chemically can reopen that vessel to get circulation back to the brain tissue. This medication was approved and introduced to the market in 1995, so it's been around for a long time. In the New England Journal of Medicine, there was a paper that released an article basically demonstrating that individuals who are suffering from a stroke who received this medication had a reduced risk of disability at 3 months, greater than 30% of those who did not receive this medication. And at this time in 1995, this was the only thing that was available for people with stroke. Prior to that, if you had a stroke, we basically admitted you to the hospital and started your therapy. There was nothing we could do. So this was groundbreaking and life-changing. So there are limitations. There are some terms that we have to, sort of consider that would make an individual not a candidate. There's a very long list of criteria. The symptoms of stroke have to be known to have begun within the last 3 hours. In some circumstances, we can go out to 4.5 hours and administer this medication safely. But we need to know when your symptoms began. So having a family member or somebody who has seen you last normal is very important in our decision-making process. When people wake up from their stroke and the last time they were normal was last night when they went to bed and 8 hours have elapsed, that's a very difficult circumstance for us. Although that's starting to change too, and I'm hopeful in the next 2 years that that'll even be something that we can hopefully still administer treatment, but right now it's still not quite there yet. There is a risk of administering this medication. Basically, the risk is bleeding. Bleeding is about 6% in individuals who receive TPA, so it's a small risk, but your chance of improvement is about 33% better than if you don't get it. So we really, really want to give this to you if we can. So what else can be done if we can't give you TPA, or if we give you TPA, sometimes there's still additional options. There is something called intra-arterial stroke treatment where they give TPA via an artery instead of a vein. We don't do that at our hospital, but in our partners in Grand Rapids have that ability to do that. And then most recently, the mechanical extraction of a thrombus is sort of the new standard of care, and I'll talk about that here in a minute. This is called thrombectomy. Thrombectomy essentially means that we're going in and we're taking out the clot, the thrombus. We're removing the thrombus. Just a few years ago in 2015, again, a New England Journal article published a study called the Mr. Clean Study. The Mr. Clean Study looked at many individuals, this was in the Netherlands, who basically were taken in for mechanical thrombectomy, where they removed the clot out of the artery, even after having been given TPA, and it had to have been within 6 hours of symptoms. 13% of those patients, I'm sorry, there was a 13% better response for those patients than those who did not receive thrombectomy, and that was basically considered a statistically significant study in that it changed the way that we now treat stroke patients. So if you have a clot that we can see on your imaging, we send you to our partners in Grand Rapids. We get that clot out so that you have the best opportunity for recovery. And even just this year, in 2018, another study was done where now they're considering thrombectomy up to 24 hours from the stroke symptom onset. So this is even making it even more helpful to treat patients for longer who potentially don't get there quickly enough. What we have to show, though, is on imaging, we have to show that there's something called a mismatch. So that's basically a radiographic finding that there is still viable brain tissue that could be saved. So that's done via some, again, another scan. So it's possible that we can treat you up to 24 hours. But again, your best chance of treatment is within those first 3 to 4 hours. So getting there sooner than later is always the recommendation. In this study, there was an improvement, actually a profound improvement, at 90 days, 49% better than those who just had medication alone. So there was no change in mortality, but morbidity and disability was profoundly better at 90 days, so 3 months after the stroke occurred. That's a big, big number. Medical therapy, yep, TPA. So this is actually just a simple illustration of what they do for thrombectomy. This is a device called the Mercy device, which actually isn't as much used as some of the newer devices, but I couldn't find a video. This is the best illustration I can find, but it's a great way to show you how they go in and take this out. There's no words here, this is just video. They basically, they thread a catheter up through the groin, all the way up to the brain. They thread it through the clot, and they release. And basically what happens is this huge coil is stuck within the clot, and then they're able to retract the clot out. And again, they've improved on this device even over the years, so there are better mechanisms to do it, but this is basically the same principle of what happens. So here they'll show you when they pull it out and then they can recirculate the blood. It's pretty cool, actually. It's amazing what they pull out. So again, this is just another illustration of where the blockage was here. You see the internal carotid artery splitting here, and this side is blocked, this side is patent, but here, after they pull the clot out, look at, the whole artery is fed by the blood supply again. So pretty remarkable. And that's a picture of what they pulled out. A pretty large clot. That's a good question. Well, that would be good to have in that picture. They're, I don't know, a couple, sometimes inches. Some, usually smaller than an inch, but, you know, they're sizable. Yeah, they do it in Grand Rapids for us. We don't have an interventional neurologist in Holland Hospital, but we have direct access to their stroke interventional neurologist there. So we call them personally, talk to them, say we have this individual with this stroke symptom, this is their stroke scale, this is what we think, this is what our imaging shows, and they say, yep, send them. We'll have our people ready, essentially. Everything always goes to pathology, any specimen. You know, it's not something that we routinely look at. The radiologist or the interventionalist may look at that more significantly, but for me, I don't usually see those results. But anything that's extracted from the body always goes to pathology, so they always look at it. So again, just a summary is that stroke is a brain attack. Recognizing symptoms quickly and seeking treatment urgently, emergently is critical because it saves brain function, reduces mortality, reduces disability, and can improve quality of life after a stroke. So this leads into the post-stroke discussion about how is therapy managed and handled. So I'll open the floor for Barb.
I'm here today with a few of my friends from our rehab team. We work a lot with folks that have had experience with stroke and have survived it. I'll let you they'll talk in a few minutes, and if there's questions that you have for them too, you may certainly bring that up. So we just talked about surviving, right? The first part of this whole process is getting to a hospital and being treated to save your life. But you'll notice once the process of saving your life is over, a whole new process begins with now what, right? So first of all, you're in an unnatural environment in the hospital. You may get a little therapy. Some folks end up going to another level of care for some therapy before they get to our program. Some people go immediately home. It kind of depends on the severity of the symptoms that you're left with after the stroke. You will also find, I think, that the expectation for how you function in a hospital is very different than how you're going to function at home. You don't live in a hospital full time. You have therapists and doctors and nurses and dietitians and pharmacists who are helping you with all of the things that need to be managed. But pretty soon you're going to be home and on your own. And that changes how we look at things, for sure. So once you're past the medical crisis, the switch comes to, now how do we make sure you don't have another one? Dr. Johnston talked about that a little bit. There are certain things in your genetic makeup that put you at a higher risk of stroke that obviously you have no control over. There are other lifestyle that you have a lot of control over. And so the things that we want to make sure that you're doing is, first of all, listening carefully to your physicians and making sure you're taking the medications that they want you to take, exactly how you're taking, how they want you to take them, not stopping if you don't like it, but being really closely in communication with those people that are managing your health care. We talk about a healthy balance of exercise and eating. We talk about reducing stress in your life as much as we can. Please stop smoking. That is a really high indicator of another. That's a bad, it contributes a lot to stroke. And really good blood pressure and blood sugar control. We ask folks to be really, really aware of how you feel physically and keep close tabs on all of the things that your doctors want you to keep tabs on. The part I'm here to talk more about, though, is the whole recovery or restoration program. Rehabilitation, many of you may have had a little, I see some familiar faces in here that I know that you know something about rehabilitation, but we start with identifying where your barriers are. Now, again, Dr. Johnston talked about the parts of your brain that are affected by a stroke will lead you with a variety of different symptoms. Some people have problems physically more than they have, let's say, cognitively. But we'll get into that in a minute. We're going to try to help you make a path to help you get back to the best life that you can have following your stroke. We're your catalyst. We like to kind of refer to ourselves as a coach. We're going to give you the skills that and the suggestions that you need, perhaps, to move on to another level of independence. But it's really going to be up to you as a survivor and as a family unit to do what we ask you to do, because we can't do it for you. We just give you suggestions and coach you along the way. Our team is involved. We have four different disciplines. We have physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, and social work. I am the care manager. And I kind of coordinate the care from the admission and try to help you get through the whole process with the least confusion as possible. We have lots of different people looking at you from a different point of view, but our team specifically works very closely with each other. So they're all looking at the same problems from a little bit of a different angle to try to help you get back to hopefully where you can feel real good again about your life. So let's talk about some symptoms. Some symptoms are very, very obvious, right? You have a part of your body that doesn't work very well, which makes things difficult. So if you have an arm that doesn't work so well, it's hard to get dressed or take a shower or feed yourself or do anything with two hands. If you have a leg that doesn't work real well, it's hard to move around. It's hard to get in and out of cars. It's hard to get in and out of the bathtub. All of your everyday activities take more effort. There are other symptoms, though, that are a little bit more subtle that maybe you don't even realize the significance of them until you get home because you've not really had to do a lot of these things in a hospital. So let's say medications. In the hospital, a nurse gives those to you, yeah? You're going to get home, and you have to be able to keep track of that on your own, and you find it very difficult. You try to go to the grocery store, and it's too far to walk, and you're overstimulated with all the people around you, and you can't find things, and you forget that, oh, I already got the butter. I don't need butter again. Or some folks really struggle with a lack of wanting to do anything. It's really hard to get motivated to do things. A lot of people find emotional concerns. I'm really crabby, or I'm crying all the time, or I'm really irritated with people around me, and that's not like who I am. And why does it take such a long time to find things? Like if you're reading, or if you're looking, you're scanning around, and you're missing, there's something not right with the way that things are looking to you. Even things like bowel and bladder control might be different, and you might not notice that until you get home, because again, in the hospital, folks are helping you figure that all out. Why does that happen? Any of those problems could be related to your memory. Cognitive problems, we'll let Libby talk about that in a minute, but cognitive problems are a very common event after certain types of strokes, and it makes everyday activities very difficult. There seems to be sometimes a disconnect between your brain and your body. Your brain doesn't always interpret what your body's telling it correctly, and your body doesn't always get the message from your brain what it's supposed to do. So we have a lot of movement things that are kind of off. Sometimes it takes longer to think things through and process, figure out if someone gives you instructions, for instance, and they maybe give you three of them in a row. You might only remember the first one because it takes a long time to get those instructions in. And weaker, discoordination, and sometimes we do have pain. Folks that end up with limb pain because your nerves are a little bit on fire. That's another thing that happens sometimes. We have a humongous team of therapists, as you can see. Not all of these folks work with people that have had strokes, but this is the whole Holland Hospital outpatient rehab team, and our neuro outpatient group is part of this team.